Hello and welcome to another episode of These Little Moments Podcast. I'm your host, your online health and wellness coach, Brian Kassam. And in this episode, I have the pleasure of interviewing William Grazione. He is the founder and head coach of The Educated Dieter. In this podcast, him and I discuss, how do you know if you're healthy enough to lose weight? What is the deal with carb cycling? Is reverse dieting necessary? And what are the keys for creating diet adherence, as well as does stress play a role with fat loss? So this is a very, very educational podcast that is going to help you a ton. And I hope you enjoy it. I'll see you in there. Yo,
what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. Let me go ahead and connect my headphones real quick.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, I think we're good to go.
Yeah?
Dude, that microphone sounds extra pro, dude. Like, crispy, man.
You like how it covers half my face?
I usually use the big mics, man, and I used to have a bunch of mics like set up on my desk and stuff, and then I started using these, and I was like, this is pretty convenient.
Yeah.
I'm actually getting ready to start our podcast back up in the month of March, so I'm really excited about that.
Let's go.
Obviously, this is just good timing. Obviously, like, you reached out, I think, right after an IG live I did, and it's always great to reconnect with people. I remember your name from way back in the day, man. So, hopefully you're doing really well. Hopefully, you know, God is moving things in your life, and you're doing amazing.
Oh man, I appreciate you. And that's a lot of, because you are probably one of my first mentors in the online space, which is,
oh wow,
I'm very grateful for, because you're one of the better ones in terms of people to learn from, and especially from an educational standpoint, because I was one of the like OG like FOCA people like back in the day.
Holy cow. Taking it back, dude.
I know, dude. Holy shit. It's crazy.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love it.
It's wild. While we're at it, what's the name of your podcast that you're starting back again in March?
Yeah, so the first 100 episodes, we branded it as Hey Coach Radio. So I don't know if you remember, but back in the day, I started this series called Hey Coach.
Yeah.
And it was just Hey Coach everything.
I think that started from FOCA, because we were just like, yeah, we had so many questions.
Yeah, everybody just said, Hey Coach, Hey Coach, Hey Coach.
Yeah.
And I was just in there in the Facebook group just answering questions like all day long.
Yeah.
But we decided to rebrand it as The Educated Dieter Show. And the next 100 episodes, so from episode 100 to 200, we're going to do The Educated Dieter Show, just because it works with the brand, you know what I'm saying? And I want everything to kind of be uniform. But I'm really excited about that, because truthfully, it's probably my favorite medium to create content on.
Really?
Just the opportunity to bring people in, really connect with people, you know, have like that real in-person experience. I think it's unmatched, man. I love it.
1000%. And that's why, same thing. I'm grateful for us to have this conversation, because it's like you said, it's different than just messaging on like an Instagram or something like that. Like it actually feels more like it's a conversation.
So yeah.
That's absolutely amazing. And, you know, like I said, I got a lot of questions to ask you, because again, I think you're one of the smartest people in our industry. And I think based off all the guidance you used to give us, you know, back when I really got first started into online coaching, I thought it was the most sustainable information to helping clients, and also the most, I would just say, like, realistic, right? I think a lot of your approach, from my perspective, is meeting the clients where they're at, right? Rather than trying to, you know, put them in a place where they're not ready to go. But before we really get into all that, you also have the one of the coolest, like almost like Goodwill Hunting type of stories, like foundations from where you started to where you are now. So I'd love to like you to help people understand where you got your start, and then how you got to where you are now.
Yeah. So my story is fairly simple, and I've I come from being a very quiet kid, so I didn't talk very much at all. But that was due to trauma that impacted me when I was about from 2 to 3 years old. I was traumatized, and essentially I never really found my voice until later on in life. And from that point, I gravitated towards sports. You know, I was the quiet kid, but I was also very athletic. I was always just stronger and faster than most kids. And that landed me into playing football. I started playing football, played football, made all the all-star teams, got a college scholarship, went to college, played football, and then quickly realized that, like, hey, I was really interested in, like, building muscle and losing body fat. Because if anybody's ever been at the college level and saw some of the physiques of college athletes, you're just like, dude, wow.
Bunch of freaks.
How, like, at, you know, at 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, how can you look like that? And I just remember we had guys coming in from Texas, California, Florida, New Orleans, like Alabama, all these different places. And I'm looking at these guys and I was like, dude, I thought I was strong in high school. This is like next level stuff. And I became very interested in, you know, just the human body in and of itself and what it was truly capable of, because I had worked out pretty much my whole life, but I never really looked the way that I wanted to look. And that landed me in the exercise and nutrition science as my major. Graduated from academia, moved back home to Florida, and, you know, kind of decided to pursue personal training. I had no idea personally that online coaching was even a thing back then, but through my story, it basically allowed me to find it. So when I moved back home, my first job back was as a janitor of a gym. Right. So I was the janitor of Gold's Gym, St. Petersburg, Florida. Wow. In my opinion, one of the best gyms I've ever gone to. And I've traveled around the United States of America. I've been to Ennis, Gold's. I've been to all the different places. And I loved that gym, dude. Like, I loved pulling up in the parking lot, walking in, the camaraderie, the equipment, everything about it. And I was the janitor. I was the guy that was in there cleaning the toilets, man. I was the guy that worked the night shift for like a year and a half. And at the time, I was bodybuilding as well. So while I worked the night shift, I would get off of work around like 6, 7 o'clock in the morning. I would go home. I was living at my mom's house at the time. And I would, you know, go to bed about 7 o'clock. I'd wake up maybe around like 1, 2 p.m. I'd wake up, I'd prep my food, go do my cardio. I'd meet my now wife at the gym. And we would train together from like, you know, from like 5 o'clock to like 6:30 or something. And then I'd get ready to go into work around 10 p.m. And my job was just like everybody who's listening to this. Like, you go to the gym, right? And you see the guy walking around with the Ghostbuster vacuum pack on, and he's just pushing that thing, and he's cleaning the dumbbell racks, and he's doing, that was me. And the interesting thing was, is while I was there, I always knew like there was something, God didn't save me for no reason, right? So I had a near-death experience when I was 18 years old. And I always knew, okay, God didn't save me to just be this person, to be a janitor. Nothing against janitors, because I like to say I was the best janitor in the world. But I knew that that wasn't the end for me, right? And so what I started to do is I just started to pay attention. So I'm like, all right, they got all these trainers in this Gold's Gym. All their clients, they have questions. They got questions all day long. And I'm just, I'm tuned in. I'm like, I look like I'm listening to music, but I just turn my thing off and I'm just listening to clients. I'm like, all right, she got a question about training. She got a question about fat loss. She got a question about how many carbs she should be eating. Got questions about how much cardio she should be doing, how often they should be working out, like all these questions. And every day I would just compile a list of questions and I'd go back to my mom's house, you know, obviously go in my room, pull my computer out, and I just started researching everything I could, because while I do have a degree in academia, there's a lot of things that academia isn't going to teach. And oftentimes it's the end of one, the specifics, right? The nuance, the context dependence that I didn't really learn from academia, but I learned from working with people and listening to people. And so with that being said, I remember just going back into the gym, man, and I'd walk up to those same people that had questions. I'd be like, hey, I know your trainer didn't have the answer for you yesterday, but I went home and I found you the answer.
Wow.
Like, can I have a minute or two of your time? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. So Then I would just tell them what the answer to their question was. And then over the course of time, I became known as the janitor that could answer all the nutrition questions.
Yeah.
And then one day I had the epiphany, right? And I think the origin story of most people is you realize you're capable of doing more than you're doing right now.
1,000%.
And so I remember one day I'm vacuuming the floor and I just had the epiphany. I'm like, all right, Mike's in there. He was the general manager of the Golds. And I just threw the vacuum off and I just walked into his office. I was like, hey, Mike, look, you know, obviously you've seen what I've been doing. You know, everybody in the gyms kind of know what I've been helping them with. You saw me win an overall at my very first bodybuilding show, right? And it was all done via what I know from a nutrition intervention perspective. So I want to be able to become the best personal trainer at this gym. And, you know, he was like, all right, well, give me your fastest 1 minute spiel. You know, like, why should we hire you? I gave him my 1 minute story and he said, dude, when can you start?
Wow.
And I was like, Monday. And he's like, all right, bet. And it was a Friday. And he gave me my shirts that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember like that was a turning point because then when I became the personal trainer at the Gold's Gym, everybody that I had already helped, they were all seeking me out. And within the first month or 2 months, I had already had a full roster because I had, without getting anything in return, I was the go-giver, right? Yeah. So I'm giving. And then those people decided to work with me because I had already given them so much value at the time. And that's kind of where the story turned into entrepreneurship and working for myself.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to meet a gentleman that was my first mentor, my first educator influence, which was Dr. Lane Norton, who was a really good friend of mine. And, you know, if any of you don't follow Dr. Lane Norton, I'd highly recommend checking him out. He also has a phenomenal education curriculum with him and Dr. Bill Campbell, which I highly recommend for any new online coaches.
Mm-hmm.
But he became a friend of mine and he kind of was the first person I was like, Will, this is possible, man. Like, I need you to know that it's possible. And, you know, I just remember hanging out with him and I'm like, dude, how did you do this? Like, how did you acquire? And he's like, Will, this is all I do. I don't do anything else but work with people online.
Yeah.
And at the time I was working with maybe 10 people, 15 people online, but I wasn't charging anybody a dollar.
Wow.
Like nobody paid anything.
Right.
And I had already helped about 3 or 4 people turn pro.
Wow.
And I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm pretty good at this thing. Like, maybe I should just start charging people some money. And that was the turning point. So the gym found out what I was doing, creating the transformations that I was creating because people would post about it on Facebook. We didn't have Instagram back then.
Right.
And they were like, hey, we saw your Facebook post. We need to talk to you in the office today. And I was like, okay.
Oh, shit.
And they basically just said, you know, hey, well, you're either going to be 100% Gold's Gym or not Gold's Gym at all. Right. Yeah. And looking back at it from a business perspective now, I understand.
Sure.
In that moment, though, I was like, all right, well, am I willing to bet on myself or do I just want to stay in this box gym? And it was very weird the way that it happened, but it was that same day I got an email from somebody in the UK.
Wow.
Right. And they said, hey, found your pictures on the internet. I know you're a natural pro bodybuilder. I want to hire you to coach me. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
You're in the UK. How am I going to coach you?
Yeah.
And this was before we didn't have any systems. We had no platforms. Right. We had no nothing. And he was like, well, you could just send attachments through the messenger here on Facebook. And I was like, okay, it works. And then at that point, I realized that my future was not in the box of the gym, but it was the world.
Wow.
And then that kind of takes us into how I got involved in online coaching, which started for me in 2010.
Mm. Wow. Dude,
long
that's...
story, but that's how it happened.
Dude, no, but that's why I wanted you to tell it because one, I think for you to have so much awareness around your calling, right? Like that, like you said, like you kind of had multiple epiphany moments, right? Where I was just like, almost like your North Star of like, I know I want to help these people and help as many as I can. I just don't know how that's going to look. And like slowly but surely you were led to that direction, right? And I completely relate to your box gym telling you it's this or that, right? Because that was me with LA Fitness when I started making YouTube videos, same thing on how to help people with nutrition, all that stuff. And they pulled me aside. They're like, you're giving away secrets and, you know, we need you to stop doing that. I'm like, what? I'm like, you can Google this stuff. It's not like crazy.
Exactly.
But I also love your, and that's why I wanted you to tell that story, because you have a very humble beginning where, like I said, you were just like, hey, I just want to help people and make sure these dumbbells look clean, right? And then through giving that advice, you became somebody who gave with kindness, right? And without asking for anything in return. And I think as coaches, that's always what I would say good coaches, right? With good intentions, our job is, how can I help you, right? And then, you know, if you become a client later on, amazing, right? Like, our job is just to give you the resources. So I think, like I said, your story is very humbling and very relatable. I would say too, so now that you've been coaching for well over 10 years now, right? Like, online coaching.
14th year, yeah.
Yeah.
14.
Which is crazy to think about. But how, I guess when you're approaching a client, or if you're trying to assess a client, I would say, how do you know, because you kind of talk about this in some of your Instagram posts, how do you know somebody is at a good starting point or healthy enough to begin that weight loss process?
Yeah, so that's obviously a really good question. And to keep the context pretty clear here for the audience, because I could go down a bunch of different rabbit holes with this one. But the first thing is that I like to have our clients complete a metabolic stress questionnaire, or MSQ for short. Now, normally when they complete this MSQ, it at least allows me the opportunity to either, number one, see, hey, do you have any issues that we should pay attention to? Or number two, like, it's a really bad case and there's a lot of issues we need to pay attention to. But not asking the questions just because you don't have the knowledge and the awareness to ask the right questions, I mean, that's up to the coach,
right?
So if you reflect back to any of your clients that maybe you've worked with, I know you've been coaching for a long time as well, but the only ones that I would really like think about were the ones that I felt like I, no matter what I did, I couldn't help them. You know, it was almost like they were doing the right stuff, like based off of what I knew at the time, but they just weren't responding the way that I thought they should be responding. Yeah. But now, knowing what I know now, I had to kind of unpack things, maybe open the hood up on a couple of clients and be like, all right, nobody's taking a look at the engine yet. We got to go ahead and take a look at the engine to see why the car isn't producing maximum horsepower.
Yeah.
Right. So then you could implement, all right, if somebody has a, you know, 30, 40, 50 or higher score on an MSQ, there's probably something from a lifestyle supplement or internal health perspective that we probably need to fix. Right. If somebody's like 10, 20, they're super healthy. We probably don't have to worry about any of that stuff. And in all fairness, the coaching that we're providing them is likely going to fix those small problems in and of itself.
Right.
But I've seen MSQ scores up around 115 before, which, I mean, that's a really bad case. Most of them, though, if they do kind of categorize as being more of a hormone specific type of case, we're looking at a score between like a 50 and a 70. And those are ones that I really do have to pay closer attention to, because there are metabolic issues that are going on that we actually need to fix first. Now, it's not to say that the lifestyle and the coaching we're providing them can't fix them,
right?
But it's also, I don't think it's doing it a good enough quality of service, because you're not actually opening up the hood on a car that broke down on the side of the road. We're just looking at it and we're like, oh, it's a nice looking car. It's got nice rims on it. Like, I don't understand why it would break down.
Yeah.
Right. But you don't know what you don't know until you decide to maybe go get some lab work done or something like that. And in most cases, anybody that scores, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, I do recommend they get labs just to see.
Yeah.
Because I would rather, I'm knowledgeable enough to review the panel and actually make it an educational moment for them.
Right.
And just, if for nothing else, let me teach you about your internal health, because everybody else has just looked at you as being a body that weighs a specific amount with a specific circumference. But what's actually going on inside that's making you feel the way you feel? Right. So I think, how do you know if client's healthy enough to diet? The other thing we have to go into is their dietary history. Diet history is probably the most important thing, because the diet history essentially dictates why they are in the position that they're in now, right? So all that stuff I talked about, the fancy hormone course, like all that stuff, it's created from what happened 3 to 5 years before they found me, right? So let me ask that question. What's that looked like? Most of the time it's yo-yo dieting, right? It's like jump from this one to this one to this one to this one.
Right.
And if I ask the question, I'm like, all right, well, how much time did you actually spend trying to improve your metabolic health in an off season, quote unquote, or a maintenance phase, or build muscle, not focus on losing body fat, you just focus on being healthy as possible? They all say never.
Right.
I've never done that, but I've dieted ever since I was 20 years old.
Right.
Now you're 40 and we're wondering why we have issues.
Right.
So that would be the other thing, the diet history.
Yeah.
I would also probably look at like weight loss success in the last 10 years. So like, what have they done that's actually felt like it worked for them?
Yeah.
And keep in mind, when I say worked, I don't mean you lost 10 pounds. I mean, you lost the 10 pounds and then 6 months later, you still had lost the 10 pounds.
Right.
It wasn't losing 10 pounds and then gaining 12 back. You know, I don't see that as success. I see success as the before, after, after. That's the real success. It's not the before and after you see on Instagram. It's the after, after.
Yeah.
That was, those are the ones that I look at. And I'm like, just because think about it from a of like an impact perspective, right? You help a woman that's 100 pounds overweight lose 100 pounds.
Yeah.
She loses 100 pounds and everybody loses their mind. Oh my God, look at that. It's amazing. Follow up with her 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, 18 months, 2 years, 3 years later. Did she maintain it? That's the powerful stuff. And most of the time that has all to do with their lifestyle and also the education that you can provide them to learn how to work with their body and actually stop working against it all the darn time. And then the other one I would say is, I think they should be eating a good amount of calories, right? Before considering fat loss consistently for a while, maybe 6 months or so, having the opportunity to have built muscle, having the opportunity to, you know, feel good, not do a bunch of cardio, make sure that their lifestyle is dialed in, their sleep quality, stress management, those types of things. And normally if they're doing all the right stuff and they haven't tried to diet for about 6 months to a year, usually those are the clients that you see that have the best transformations.
And it's funny you say that, because I feel like most people who come to coaches, like, it's, at least in my experience, it's very rare I've had a client who's come to me 6 months of maintenance, you know, prior to losing weight, right?
Yeah.
So, and so what would you say? So I guess if someone comes to you like that and your approach is to put them into maintenance, how do you help somebody navigate that physically, but also mentally, right? Because a lot of people, they hear you're going to eat more intentionally and it's going to better your health, and they're like, hell no. They're like, that's
no, I mean, it's 100% awareness first, education second, right? And then being able to essentially provide social proof to back up everything that you're saying, right? Because there are a lot of people that can talk a big game, but they can't back it up, you know, or there are people that they want you to believe in maybe something that they're doing. Granted, it's not proven by science. It's not actual real. They just want you to believe it. So number one, I'd say we have to create the awareness. I think we create the awareness by doing things like this. Like, let's just talk about it. Podcasts, videos, social media stuff, word of mouth when we're talking to our clients, stuff like that. The second thing is, by doing these types of content mediums, you can educate the masses, right? You have, let's just say, for instance, you have 5,000, 10,000 people that decide to listen to a podcast that you are on. It's like, holy crap. Like, think about that. Like, just think about, you're standing in a mega church talking to 5,000 people that all lined up to hear about metabolic adaptation. Like, that's the power that we have with online platforms now. So education is probably the biggest thing. That's why I named our company The Educated Dieter.
You know?
And then the social proof. So we have a private Facebook community where I talk a lot about this stuff in there, but we also have a lot of amazing women that have already gone through the process. And so when we get a new client in and she's like, I just don't know about this. I'm not, you know, I have never tried this before. You get a lot of support from people supporting people.
Right.
And I think that's the most valuable thing is like, hey, look, I felt the same way, you know, but I went through it, you know, I pushed through the hard time and like now I'm in a so much of a better position. I feel better. I'm sleeping better. I built muscle. I lost body fat. Just stick with it because it works. You know,
right.
That's the stuff that I think is the most important is the educating of the consumer.
Absolutely. And I think, and I think that is extremely important because I think without the understanding of the why we're going into an intentional maintenance phase. And I also think when you can help someone bring awareness to their, you know, behavioral patterns as to, hey, you've gone down the same road every single year. You've yo-yo dieted, you've tried every diet, right? You've never intentionally tried to not diet, right? And I think for a lot of people, that is like a wake-up call because they've only known trying to lose fat, right? So
100%.
To go along with that, to help people understand like why it could be a good thing, what are some benefits that you've coached people and seen and from what science tells us that can help somebody going into a intentional maintenance phase?
Yeah, so if we're talking about what the actual maintenance process can do for you, I think there's a couple of things to consider. Number one is that the organism in and of itself requires energy to upregulate its processes, right? So what I want all the listeners here to remember is when you eat less, you burn less. When you eat more, you burn more. So therefore, if you consistently eat less, what do you think is going to happen to your metabolic capabilities? They decline. It's like a volume knob on them older radios. You know what I'm saying?
Crank that
thing up, get the house shaking, and then you turn it back down. But like, if you are turned down for so long, you are basically, a lot of people think the metabolism is a stagnant thing. The metabolism is dynamic. It can shift. It's a moving target, but it's based off of how you actually treat it. So in like the physique development space, we know that a lot of people, when they're getting ready for a bodybuilding show, contest prep, a photo shoot or something like that, a lot of women can actually go into clinical hypothyroidism, which is an underactive thyroid, okay? The thyroid, your sex hormones, and your internal health essentially dictate the rate of your metabolism. So if we, for a long enough period of time, turn that thing down, we're eating 1,000 calories, 1,200, you're doing a bunch of cardio, praying, why are we not losing weight? Well, it's because you're actually metabolically adapted, right? So let's go ahead and let's set an intentional time with a process that I call ADP, which is annual diet planning. And let's set an intentional next 3 to 6 months. How much muscle can we build in the next 3 to 6 months? Because oftentimes a lot of people are coming in saying, you know, I just want to lose this. I want to lose this. I want to lose this. And I say, well, let's not focus on what you feel like you need to lose in the right now. Let's focus on what you need to gain. Right. And the gaining is building back the lean muscle mass that they lost from the years and years of dieting.
True.
There's actually a very interesting statistic that shows that women in the perimenopausal transition, which is a 5 to 10 year transition of time, lose between 1 and 3 pounds of lean body mass a year. What's that add up to? You know, I mean, if you lose 10 to 15 pounds of lean body mass over the course of 5 years, I mean, what does the physique start to look like? Right. And then also what happened metabolically, because now the machine that's capable of producing the horsepower is a smaller machine, right? Yeah. So the importance of reverse dieting is basically to be able to crank your calories up, not in a position to where you're gaining an excessive amount of body fat. I think that's where a lot of coaches are doing it wrong.
Right.
But context is key here. So if you have a normal woman that comes into your coaching, right? She's 150 pounds, 160 pounds or something like that. And she's like, you know, I've been trying to diet for the last five years off and on, blah, 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 blah. Does that woman actually need to gain weight? No, they don't. But what they do need to do is they need to find what their maintenance level is without any forced weight regain. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. So we're trying to find out what their metabolism is capable of at that specific moment of time and keep them at that maintenance level of calories for likely the next 4 to 6 months to help them build muscle and to also help them crank that volume knob to burn more energy, doing the same, doing essentially the things that they should have been doing before they found us. Mm-hmm. But we're just trying to reset them. Now, as you do this, a lot of the hormones that are negatively affected from long-term chronic dieting, stress, progesterone, thyroid hormone, estrogen to progesterone ratio imbalances, testosterone, these things begin to slowly go back to a healthy baseline. Mm. Now, there are some instances where you would need to support these things with maybe some over-the-counter supplements or something like that. Mm-hmm. But the goal is for me to ensure your success as a client with our coaching, I need you to be in that top position so we can make fat loss easy. Because really, that's what all this is for.
Right.
What can we do to make fat loss easy? And that's the importance of a reverse diet or a maintenance phase. Mm-hmm. Where reverse dieting, I think, is very valuable, though, is maybe right after maybe like a photo shoot prep, a fat loss phase where you've gotten significantly lean, mm-hmm. Or maybe a contest preparation. But for mm-hmm. the majority, the gen population, I don't think they have to reverse diet with the intention of gaining weight mm-hmm. as much as they should stay at maintenance and build muscle and potentially recomp, which is building muscle and losing body fat. And the scientific literature that we have available from Jose Antonio supports that body recomposition will happen, at or slightly above maintenance calories with a high amount of protein. So that would be like 3.4 kilograms per pound of lean body mass, or 4.4 per pound of lean body mass.
Mm-hmm. And I really like what you said too, because I think a lot of times when we think about changing behaviors, we always think, well, I have to take this away. But what you said is you had a mindset shift where you say, this is what you're gaining. Right, you're gaining this muscle. You're gaining these good habits. You're gaining your health. Right, and mm-hmm. I think that's really important, because too often we focus on what do I need to change negatively, what do I need to subtract from my life to get to where I want. So I like that.
Right. That's just how diet culture is, right?
Yeah,
it's like, well, I have to eliminate everything I love, and then the only thing I want to eat is the thing that got taken away from me,
mm-hmm.
right? And all these different diets that are out there, they're so restrictive and rigid.
Yeah.
Everything is eat less, do more.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's not necessarily the thing that's going to help them.
Mm.
But again, that boils back to everything that we referred to previously, which is, what have they done for the last 10 years? Because I have had metabolically adapted women that, the eating less, moving more concept is actually causing their hormonal profile to be worse.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you do with them? You have to improvise. You have to actually dig deeper. And most of the time, as long as you dig deep enough and you find a solution, you can cause change.
For sure. And I think the other important part that, maybe people, when they think about maintenance, don't realize is you're actually going to bring a lot of awareness to the habits that cause you to self-sabotage when you are in a fat loss phase, right? Where maybe you're not getting enough of that protein, or maybe you have a lot of emotional eating going on, and that's what's caused you to self-sabotage. So allowing yourself, kind of, you think about it as not so much a vacation, but an intentional break from trying to lose weight, so you can kind of, like you said, assess the engine and see where this thing's actually breaking down on the road trip, so that we know next time we're hopping back on that road trip, we've gone over a lot of the things that have caused you to break down in the past.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the wisdom from that kind of stuff just came from me being a contest prep coach for so many years and realizing, number one, it started with a lot of the female athletes that I was working with. So a lot of them would lose their periods. They'd end up with secondary hypothalamic amenorrhea. And I had to learn, why is this actually happening? And then I dug into the intricacies of, most of the time with a contest prep coach, you're not only looking at the body and you're looking at the numbers and you're analyzing the data that you have available, but you're never actually analyzing their internal health to figure out what's truly going on that actually caused that thing.
Mm.
And so that's where a lot of my shift ended up going into more of the health side and the functional side, was just because I realized that there was a big problem and I needed to fix it. Now, I know that the industry will say, well, just eat less and move more. And a lot of people are cheating on their diets, so on and so forth. And I agree with that. I think 100%. I think that most people, they don't know how to track properly. But then I could always point the finger back to their coach and I could say, well, if they don't know how to track properly, aren't you their coach? Like, you should be helping them with that.
Right.
So like, if you're actually talking to them, which is like, for about 2 years, I had Zoom calls with all my clients. I mean, I was doing so many Zoom calls, it was insane. But in that, I was able to learn, was somebody making mistakes or not, right? We're not just kind of blindly trusting that they're tracking perfectly. But we're also saying, hey, send me some screenshots. Like, let's do a food audit here. Let's take a look at everything that you're eating. And let's make sure that if we're going into a fat loss phase, I need to trust you. You need to trust me. So let's make sure that we're dialed in here. And there's other information that we could talk about, but there were some specific cases, specifically the perimenopausal gals, that I would try to put them in a calorie deficit and their blood sugar would actually go up. Stress response.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but anyways, I'll let you go ahead and ask your question and I'll be quiet.
I think that's kind of one of my questions I have is like, how does stress play a role with fat loss and all these things?
Yeah, so for some, and I would say that most of the time, you have to just think that the fact that our body is an adaptive organism, right? So like I mentioned earlier, with, you know, constant efforts at fat loss, individuals' bodies can essentially kind of turn down or metabolically adapt. One of the primary ways that it does this is basically by cortisol levels going up and progesterone in the female physiology going down. So progesterone is the calming hormone in the female physiology that basically just keeps a woman, you know, pretty chill, relaxed. But if at any point in time progesterone drops, you have a more anxious, worried type of woman. This also can shut down your ability to reproduce. So think about the hormones that affect progesterone, which are follicle stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone, both of which get and receive signals from the HPA axis, right? So if the body's under stress, cortisol skyrockets, right? Stress is high. The thing with progesterone and cortisol, they can't live mutually. They, if one's high, one's low. If one's high, one's low. So if progesterone's super high, the woman's super calm, stress is low. And vice versa, high stress, low progesterone. This is typically how relative energy deficiency is created, is that the body senses, okay, they're doing a lot of work, they're overstressing. In order for me to stay at balance, I have to be eating enough and sleeping well enough to be able to keep up with that demand. But if we interject with diet, excessive cardio, excessive training, we can't actually recover from it, which then creates relative energy deficiency. And the body's like, all right, now I'm just hungry all the time. I'm trying to find food, but she's dieting. She's not feeding me what I need. Right. So what do I need to do to adapt and respond, turn down energy availability, conserve energy availability? There's not enough energy for me to reproduce. So therefore, my reproductive system is going to shut down. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of how I stumbled upon, you know, like relative energy deficiency, or what's called red S in the scientific literature. And then also just stress's impact on the physiology in general. So the other thing you have to realize that there are a lot of women that are in like the 35 to 45 year old range. And for all sakes and purposes, I mean, it could be because of their work. It could be because of their kids. You know, relationship issues, just daily life stressors, stuff like that. But they are what's referred to as basically being cortisol dominant. So they're just always stuck in a high cortisol state. So these are the ones where, you know, if I jump on a call with them because I want to get to know about them, I want to make sure that, you know, the educated dieter can actually help them. I'll jump on a call, Ryan, and I'll just say hi. And I won't be able to say anything for like 10 minutes. There's just so much built up. They haven't been able to talk to nobody. They're so stressed out that it just all just comes out on that call. And so for those individuals, I think it's important to understand that they are likely battling high stress responses. And the thing with a high stress response is that when stress is high, what it does, it's actually releasing small amounts of blood sugar into your bloodstream. The more blood sugar you have in your bloodstream, basically it can make you insulin resistant just from being stressed out constantly. Now, also people who are stressed out, what do they also do? They have a tendency to snack, to overeat, to emotionally eat their feelings, so on and so forth. And so now you're battling high stress, and under high stress, you're usually drinking more caffeine, more energy drinks, so on and so forth. So just think about that storm, right? I'm constantly stressed. Progesterone is low. I'm seeking energy. So now I'm taking in a bunch of caffeine, causing adrenal problems. At the same time, I'm overeating and I'm snacking. Now my blood sugar is higher, leading me to being insulin resistant. Okay. Now, higher blood glucose levels and the correlation with body fat is that fat oxidation is most optimal between like 70 and 90 milligrams per deciliter in terms of fasted blood glucose levels. But if you become insulin resistant, 100, 105, 110, 120 fasted blood glucose, good luck trying to oxidize body fat, because the optimal fat oxidation environment is like that 75 to 85 or 90. So that's how stress can negatively impact your ability to build, to both build muscle and lose body fat.
Right. And it's, and I guess, and how, if your numbers are that high, is it something where somebody still, they will not be able to lose weight, or is it something where it's just going to be very, very, like almost like paddling upstream, where it's just going to make fat loss a lot freaking harder?
Yeah. So there's a couple of different ways to look at this. But again, I want to let everybody know that everything I mentioned is context dependent.
For sure.
So we have to make sure, like, all right, is, would this be a good person to coach with this type of model? So if we were, if somebody was insulin resistant, they had high blood glucose levels, first and foremost, what we have to do is we have to try to manage stressors that they're putting on their body. Right. So what are the, what are those management stressors? I think getting people out of their normal, like, rat race is important. So having them schedule intentional time to just go for some walks, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, no distractions, like phone in your pocket or phone off, you know, just to be able to breathe and to think. The other thing is you'd also want to probably incorporate some type of a breathing practice to help them regulate their HRV, or what's referred to as heart rate variability. And this is obviously, this has been shown, like Tony Robbins has been doing this stuff forever, right? But if you check your blood pressure, okay, while you're stressed out and you're freaking out and all that stuff, it's probably going to be a little bit higher than you would expect. Lay down on the floor for 5 minutes, and just do deep breaths. Then check it again. It'll be dramatically different.
Right.
All you did was you lay down on the ground and you just took some breaths, because you actually stopped and reflected. And internally, you're like, okay, I'm going to calm myself down. This all has to do with your central nervous system. Right? So if we can calm our central nervous system down, we can reduce stress. The other thing is just making sure you're sleeping well enough, right? So making sure that you have a nighttime routine, making sure you're not overstimulating with caffeine, you know, maybe you could drink a couple cups of coffee up until maybe noon, and then I'd probably recommend eliminating it. The other thing that you have to consider is that in order to reduce blood glucose levels, in many cases, you will need to reduce calories in order to do so. So total calorie, but what I like to do personally is I like to bias the reduction of carbohydrate intake, specifically because if they already have a high amount of blood glucose in the system, in order for us to get them insulin sensitive, we just have to burn off all the extra glucose. So the way that I like to describe it is, like, you know, kind of like two separate pieces. One of them is the garage, right? Everybody listening to this knows you just take whatever extra you got and just throw it in the garage,
right?
The house is your actual body. So your body's full of glucose. Your garage is also full of glucose. So ideally what we want to do is you want to clear the garage out. We want to have a garage sale. How do we do that? Probably would recommend going on a lower than normal carbohydrate diet for about 2 to 3 weeks and actually monitoring your blood glucose levels. So you can buy a glucometer on Amazon for like maybe 30, 40 bucks, right? And you can, if you wanted to, you could actually check your blood sugar just to see, okay, this is where I started. This is where I am after a couple of weeks. And as long as you're moving your body, you are actively lifting weights, because you have to be mindful of the fact that resistance training or any anaerobic exercise uses glucose as the primary fuel source.
Right.
So if we're lifting against resistance, we're doing high repetition, we're really moving our muscles, the more likely you are to be able to drop your blood glucose levels faster. Now, that's not to say that a low carbohydrate diet is the key. It's not. But I would argue to say that most people, this is why most diets fail, is because they see immediate weight loss and they feel better when they drop their carbohydrates down to the floor. And they're like, oh, this must be exactly what I need to do.
Right.
But then you stall out. You can't live a low carbohydrate lifestyle. You go back to what you were doing before, and now we have another failed diet attempt. So maybe this is where re-implementing some carbohydrates would be a good idea. Maybe having a high carb day every week, or maybe two high carb days a week or something like that, at least until you reach your weight loss goal. But I think that going low carb in the beginning is a good way to just get a good jump start. It's also a good way to potentially, you know, achieve a couple more leaps and bounds as far as pounds lost in the beginning to help you with your motivation and your determination. I think that's a really good tool, but you know, again, I just want to highlight the fact that I'm not an advocate of low carb for life. But I have had to use it myself working with my own mom. So my mom was about 280, 290 pounds, type 2 insulin using diabetic. She has been working with a doctor for like 7 or 8 years. They never once asked her about her lifestyle. Never
classic.
No food intake, lifestyle, sedentary, active, nothing. And she had a blood sugar attack. Her blood sugar spiked up to over 600, so high. She popped some blood vessels in her eye, so she lost vision, half of her face, until she had the surgery to basically bring her vision back. And in that moment when she had that happen, I just remember calling her up and I'm like, hey mom, we've got to have a serious talk here. You know, like, you have, at the time she only had 4 grandchildren, now she has 6. And I'm like, what are you going to do? Because I knew the research that was out about insulin sensitivity and insulin resistance. I knew that living an insulin resistant life could cost you 5 to 10 years of your life. Right. So what we have to understand is, are you willing to make a lifestyle change to save you 10 years of life? And she was. And she actually, over the course of about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, lost about 110 pounds. And the really cool part is now she doesn't use as much insulin. She doesn't use as much metformin. And she regulates her blood sugar with her diet. And she's managed to maintain the 100-pound loss. And it's been about 2 years now.
That's huge. And that's that means so much more too, coming from a son, right? To see your mom make these changes, and also, like you said, to maintain it, right? Because that means you helped her to see a way that is sustainable, and kind of like we talked about in the beginning, like, what's mama's before, after, right? And her after is being a healthier grandmother, like, to your kids, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's absolutely
Absolutely, man. I mean, it's you know, at the end of the day, like, again, you have to be adaptable, but you also have to be willing to hunt for answers. And so, like, you know, I would want nothing more in life than to say, yeah, I helped to save my mom's life. You know what I mean? And so while the medical world and traditional diets had failed her, I was like, I'm going to find a solution to this problem. And I just so happened to find the solution to the problem.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. And you did touch a little bit on, you know, carb cycling a little bit previously. Can you kind of talk a little bit about, you know, maybe how does carb cycling help? Like, should somebody implement it? Like, even calorie cycling, right?
You obviously know, Ryan, but like, I was talking about these carb cycles so long ago before it was actually a thing. And then it became a thing and I was like, cool, like, science actually validates what I've been talking about. But, so inside of a fat loss effort, right? So think about, you're intentionally lowering your calories, putting yourself into a caloric restriction to oxidize body fat and lose weight while maintaining lean body mass. That should be the goal too. Cause our goal necessarily isn't weight loss. It's fat loss. There's a difference, right? So inside of a fat loss effort, why would we implement something like a refeed or a back to back refeed, or even three refeeds in a week, or a diet break, or something like that. The rationale there is basically to prevent people from reaching fatigue and burnout with their diet, right? So think about the diet in and of itself as being a constant low calorie endeavor where you're never having anything to look forward to, right? And if, in all honesty, your energy bucket is getting lower and lower and lower and lower and lower and lower and lower until you're like, all right, I'm burned out. It's only been a month. So ideally what I decided to do was, you know, start to use maybe like a one high carb day followed by six low day carb cycle. That's my very first carb cycle that I'd ever experimented with. And a lot of my clients were like, oh, Will, man, this is great because I have something to look forward to if I want to eat the extra stir fry meal or some pancakes or some waffles or, you know, whatever. Or I want to have a date night with my husband or my wife. This is awesome. And I also feel psychologically it gives me a break to reset for the next 6 days. So we have to think about what does it do psychologically? I think it does that. I think it gives the dieter a break or something to look forward to, which can also help with stress management, right? So think about that. The longer you're in a calorie restriction, that typically the more stressed out you get. Well, hey, let's just go ahead and let's give you a kind of a quote unquote free eating day where you can have up to, you know, 250, 300, 400, 500 grams of carbohydrates, and it's not necessarily going to hurt you. The other side from a physiological perspective is, and this is where you kind of go into the weeds of it, but a 24-hour refeed has really only been shown to help replenish muscular glycogen, which basically just means that you're refilling your muscle tissue with carbohydrate, water, sodium, which can help the physique athlete look a bit more round, more jacked, things like that. It can also provide a momentary spike in a hormone called leptin. Now, if any of you haven't heard of leptin, leptin serum is very important for the overall health of your entire physiology, because when leptin serum is high, it's, again, volume knob cranked up. It's sending signals to your immune system, your reproductive system, your hormones, your thyroid, your immune, like everything. It's sending signals throughout the whole thing. As you get deeper and deeper into a fat loss phase, that leptin serum starts to lower, lower, lower. So that same volume knob I was talking about earlier, now basically you're cranking that down. So the signals that were once raging out, now they're like,
it's very hanging on.
Process. And so that's how I would usually operate, like a one high, six low. Then you also have two high carb days followed by five low days. You could also do three highs, four lows, or you could do a high carb day on your training days, low carb days on your non-training days. And each one of those kind of has its own specific physiological benefit. But to summarize the last three, it's been shown in the scientific literature that with follicle stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone in females, it does take roughly 72 hours of refeeding to begin to re-stimulate the reproductive system, right? So sending those signals, because all hormones work in a pulsing frequency, right? But if the hormones can't pulse, then how does the reproductive system stay healthy? So 48-hour refeeds, I think, are more beneficial than single-day refeeds for women. I also think 72-hour refeeds are more beneficial for women versus a one. But I would also say that I think the leaner an athlete is, the less they should be dieting. Okay, so here's kind of what I mean is a lot of body fat, right? One high carb day every week or every 2 weeks, right? As you get them leaner, hey, let's go to like one a week. As you get leaner, let's go to two a week. As you get leaner, let's go to three a week. Before you know it, you're kind of already back to like maintenance.
Right.
And then you're kind of holding them there. You're holding them at a maintenance level of calories, but they're not gaining all the fat back that they lost. Does that make sense? And then you could talk about diet breaks as well. So, you know, if you think about people that have a lot of body fat to lose, chances are, you know, they could stay on lower carbohydrates for months, maybe 1 month, 2 months or something like that. They could lose a considerable amount of weight. I've got several clients right now that I haven't given them like a refeed day yet, but they've lost like 20 pounds and they've only been with me for like 8 weeks.
Right.
But I told them, I said, hey, once you hit this landmark, we're going to give you a whole week of a diet break. They're like, oh, I just started feeling hungry. This is actually a great time for it. So on and so forth. We can also kind of crank that metabolism back up a bit because it's a whole week worth of higher carbohydrates, you can also use a deload in that time. You can lower stress. You can just get them feeling better. You can also psychologically recharge them for the second 20 pounds.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's where I think diet breaks are the biggest thing, is for people that are necessarily overweight and obese, but people that just have more weight to lose.
Yeah.
Because most of the time, the people that have a lot of weight to lose, they've already lost it and then regained it.
Right.
So the biggest thing that I like to tell people that are in this position is we need to talk about the end of the fat loss in the beginning, because I'm not going to leave you hanging at the end.
Right.
We need to know the process of exiting. What are we going to do at the exit? The reason you failed your previous attempt when you lost 100 pounds was nobody told you about the exit. So you just went back to doing exactly what you were doing before, because this wasn't a lifestyle change. You were following a meal plan or whatever kind of crap you were provided by your previous trainer or coach, and that's the reason you gained it all back.
Right, 1,000%. And I do, and that's funny because that's you're the coach that taught me to implement diet breaks, right? And that was such a such a foreign concept, because I was just, why would someone implement diet breaks? So I would say, because I know we got a few more minutes left, but why would, I guess, what would be the parameters, right? Because you kind of mentioned that you talk a lot about on your social media how you sort of periodize somebody's nutrition, right? And you build out this plan. Is there better, would you say, and I'm sure it depends on the individual, in your experience, is it better to pre-program that diet break? Or is it something where, as you're going along and you're assessing with a client, is it something where you say, okay, because of your lower diet adherence, because of maybe stress levels going up, maybe less consistency, like we said, with adherence, is now a better time to implement rather than later on when we originally had it planned, or vice versa, or anything like that?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I think in general, as a coach, you always want to be proactive no matter what. Right? Like, if you think about a lot of the cases that I've gotten, it's the coach and the client reach like an oh shit moment.
Right.
Right? Where the coach is like, I don't know what's going on. They're not responding anymore, you know, and the client's like, well, what are you going to do? And the coach is like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you're kind of stuck in that, oh crap.
Right.
If we can be proactive,
right,
the client knows it's coming. Coach knows it's coming. Yep. I can trust something I can see.
Right.
If I can't see it, and I haven't been taught what it is, and I haven't been explained to why I need to walk down this sidewalk, I'm probably not going to walk down the sidewalk just without knowing what I'm doing, number one. Number two, it's just kind of like, maybe we'll use it, maybe we won't. Let's just be intentional.
Yeah.
Let's be intentional. Let's be proactive as coaches, because that allows the client to trust you a lot more.
Right. That's so true. I think that's a great point, where it's, if I can see, you know, the map beforehand to know where our destination's going, then I just have a much better idea. And I trust you driving,
for sure.
Right? As opposed to just being like, oh, now I need it. What is this, right? So I have one more question for you. It has nothing to do with anything we talked about already.
All right, deal.
But basically, the name of my podcast, obviously, it's called These Little Moments Podcast. And the reason I named it that is because, my little moment in my life that really sticks out to me was when I was at a fitness seminar, actually. And it was the first time I spoke to a group of people about my own mental health past, where I struggled with anxiety, depression, all these things. And so what I'm curious about for you is there a little moment in your life that sticks out to you that sort of was your North Star for either being the person you are today or the coach you are today, that really, you look back on, you're like, thank God for that moment?
Yeah, there's probably a couple of them. Number one was when I was attacked. I realized I should never take life for granted again. That was a big one, because I almost died that day. The second one I would say was the birth of my daughter, which for a young man, that was a turning point where, look, man, you're done screwing around. You know, you're done playing games.
Yeah.
This is game time. No matter where you're at in your life right now, no matter what you're going through, everything moving forward from here on, you are doing it for your kids. So the birth of my first daughter was definitely when I went all in, man.
Yeah.
That was the same point in time when I was working as a janitor. I didn't mention this on the episode, but I was also working two or three other jobs as well. And I decided just to quit all those other jobs and, you know, basically go all in on me.
Yeah.
And in that first year going all in on me, I basically tripled my income and I didn't look back.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So it was the birth of my daughter, which was that little moment, you know, when we brought her home and I was like, all right, hey, William, like look at myself in the mirror, talking to myself, grabbing the mirror, like, William, now it's time.
Yeah.
That was the moment. Yeah.
Wow. I love that. And I think I mean, what's more of like a reminder than seeing like your kid in front of you to be like, I need to, it's not just about me anymore, right? Like I need to provide for this person and have them have a better life than I had, right?
Yeah. And I mean, the goal of any parent, I feel like, should always be to make your kids better than you could have ever been. Right. And that's my goal now. So I have four children now. And my goal for all of them is to give them a life I never had, but also allow them to achieve a level of success that in my life, I could have never possibly dreamed of.
Right. Give them a different starting platform to stand on. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think you're doing a great job of that because, you know, anytime I see you working out and your kids are around you, right, they see, and I think that's so important, right? Like they see a great example of, you know, here's my dad. He busts his ass working and he makes time for his health. He makes time for us, right? So it's I think if anything, it's not just the words you say, but it's the actions they see,
100%. Yeah.
Right, that they can exemplify.
Yeah, I think a true leader understands that their actions make them that person, right? You know, can you impact people, you know, without taking action? I mean, at the end of the day, if I see you hustling, there's a level of respect there that I just have to acknowledge. Otherwise, you're just a hater, you know. But if I see somebody hustling, there's a level that I have to be like, like that's what I want. So, you know, if my kids happen to be able to see me working hard, maybe working on myself, working on the business, working hard as a coach for sports teams, and being there for my kids because they're playing sports now, that's what I want, you know, because when I reflect back through my life, I am so blessed to have had a mom that never quit. Mom's is like Superman in my eyes, right? Yeah. She went through a lot of hard stuff. She never, ever, ever quit. So now I know I will never quit for my family.
Right.
But I learned that from watching. I didn't learn that from talking to her, saying nothing. I just watched. And she didn't have to say anything. She never once told me, I work so hard. Never said, never.
Right.
I just watched her.
Yeah, I love that, man. And shout out, same. My mom would just be the one that would drive me to, you know, morning run for football, for practice, and like all these things. And, you know, it's just something you notice as a kid. You're like, holy shit, you know, it's like these people are, it's sacrifice, right? And then that's what, you know, anybody can appreciate. But I appreciate you, man. And where can people find you and all that?
Yeah, sure. So you can find me on Instagram. It's at William_Grazione. Website is theeducateddieter.com. We're on YouTube. We have a podcast. We also are on Facebook. And yeah, pretty much anywhere.
Awesome, dude. Well, I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much. You're the best. And it was awesome. Awesome reconnecting with you too after all these years.
You bet, man. I appreciate your time as well. Hopefully you have a blessed day, and I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, brother. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of These Little Moments podcast. Thank you to my former mentor, William Grazione. And if you want to find more about Will, you can look in the show notes below. And if you really enjoyed that podcast, please leave a 5-star review. I would very much appreciate it. Thank you very much. And if you would like to work together, one-on-one, fat loss coaching, health and wellness coaching, whatever you are looking for your health to make a change, you can apply for coaching at bodybrian.com/coaching. I love you, and I'll see you in the next episode. Peace out, guys.